I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! Woo!
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I am your host, 2 hours a day from 9 to 11, offering up a safe space to the independent thinker out there, beholden to no party, no politician, much like the founders envisioned, as we're going to go over in a few minutes here. Today's Tuesday. I do have some Tech Tuesday news. If I'm looking at my notes, I may crowd it out again, my poor Tech Tuesday segment, but some kind of interesting things going on there, including what may be maybe a little bit of the pendulum swinging on technology. I really wonder. I think a lot of people are intuitively, instinctively, we understand we've gone a little too far, too reliant on certain things, too addicted to certain technologies. And there seems to be somewhat of a pushback against that in some areas that I want to embrace. But I have to admit, even as somebody who does not addicted to my phone. I set my phone down and walk away from it for hours and hours and hours most days. But I'm tethered to the thing. So many things you do business-wise and maps, podcasts, radio broadcast stuff. I'm pretty addicted to my phone too anyway. Anyway, we're going to get into some people that are starting to push back against this stuff, and we'll take a look at that. Got a lot today on Joe Biden. He's released a new budget. He was asked some tough questions, and we're going to look at, are they taking down Joe Biden? Are we watching the beginning of the end for Biden? And it feels like something is brewing there. We'll see. I don't know that the people behind Joe Biden, the powers that be, really are getting any benefit from his presidency right now outside of being able to totally control him, but he's so wildly unpopular that it could be a short-term victory. So it seems like things are kind of lining up to where we may be seeing the slow at first and then all of a sudden exit of Joe Biden. I've got some clips from an interview. What's this guy's name? John Maxey. Talking about the Biden laptop, and it also talks a little bit about not just the Democrat Party, which is where my ears always perk up, but his criticisms of some of the big megastars of the Republican Party have known things that are going on right now for quite some time. So we'll get to those clips. It feels like things are starting to bubble up. We know we can get distracted and away from these things, but if the plan has already been set in motion, the New York Times came out and essentially kind of unprovoked, in my opinion, just added a little fuel to the Hunter Biden laptop thing. Why would they do that? The New York Times, not known for any journalistic integrity, they're not an organization that goes where the truth takes them. They certainly carry water for the Democratic Party and for Joe Biden up until this point. So why would the sudden admission to bring the laptop back into focus? And then even some Republicans seem to be talking about it now, but maybe they're not as innocent as they appear. So anyway, we'll talk about that stuff later. I'll be honest with you, I'm burnt out. I'm going to take a couple of days off, go see some friends down in New Orleans and Baton Rouge, and then go see my son down in Lafayette. He just turned 21, so we're heading out for some beers. Maybe catch the Saturday night basketball game down in Lafayette. But, you know, a lot of times I look at news. I'm so frustrated because really what happens is I mingle among people who continue to get into their two-party system. They blame everything on the other side, and I realize, wow, we just can't seem to get this right. We cannot get out of our own ways, and I'm just burnt out. I'm sick of the wars. I'm sick of the COVID hystericals theater. I just got news about an event that I'm supposed to attend this summer where they have told me that I will be required to show a vax card to attend. I'm sick of that stuff. I'm sick of Joe Biden. I'm sick of the worship of Donald Trump or looking for the next savior on the Republican side. I'm sick of the Mississippi legislature. We're finding out more and more about exactly how bad a majority Republican, a supermajority Republican is. I think Clay keeps making the statement, when everybody's a Republican, nobody's a Republican. I say they are being exactly what Republicans are, just establishment tools, craven for power and money like the rest of them. But I'm sick of them. I'm so sick of the local tyrants exercising this tiny little shred of power they have as we watch local communities opt out of the medical marijuana bill, and they want to make sure they can micromanage every aspect of everybody's life because they disapprove of this or that. I'm sick of all of it, and I'm so sick of the infighting between people. And if there's one thing that I could end up accomplishing with this show, it would be to wake people up to the reality that it is your government. It is your government that is the biggest threat to your way of life. And they have tried for years and years, for decades and decades, to tell you that it's Russia or Iran. If you're a Trump supporter, you believe that Iran is the great existential threat. If you're a Trump supporter, you think that China, we need to take on China, head on with China. They're going to come take our stuff. If you're a Democrat, you think it's Russia. A lot of people think it's the Taliban or ISIS. It's the terrorists, those radical jihadists that everybody salivated over for 20 years with bloodlust in their hearts to get rid of all of these people, ignoring the fact that we've been bombing the Middle East for 30 years, and they tend not to like that. Some people think it's North Korea. It just doesn't matter. The Democrats will say it's all the Republicans are the existential threat. The Republicans will all say it's the Democrats that are the existential threat to everybody. Some people hate all liberals. Some people hate all conservatives. And it is just the if there's one thing I can do with this show, it is the only true threat to our way of life in this country is our own government. It's not your neighbor. It's not your cousin. It's not your coworker who votes different than you. And this got me into, I've got this huge document saved on my computer. It's just quotes. Every time I find an interesting quote, I'm known to do quotes of the day, and I've just piled these things together. And when I talk to a conservative audience, I think that people seem to profess some admiration for the Founding Fathers. So I found a big stack of them today. So quotes of the day today is going to be a little lengthy, but I'm going to get through these things because they have known for 250 years that the government of the United States is the biggest threat to your way of life. It's not China. China's not a good government. China does nefarious things all over the world. Communism isn't just an abhorrent system of government, but China's not coming to take all your stuff. Your government is the one that's coming to take your stuff. Thomas Paine said, "It is the responsibility of the patriot to protect his country from its government." Not from China, not from Russia, not from Iran. It is the responsibility of the patriot to protect his country from his government. Thomas Jefferson said, "The issue today is the same as it has been throughout all history, whether man shall be allowed to govern himself or be ruled by a small elite." Samuel Adams said, "If ever time should come when vain and aspiring men shall possess the highest seats in government, our country will stand in need of its experienced patriots to prevent its ruin." The problem is we have a system in this country where half the people, or it's really about 30% of nut jobs on one side, 30% on the other, and they all think that their guy is my guy's not a vain and aspiring man. It's your guy that's the vain and aspiring man that needs to be dispatched with. Thomas Jefferson said, "The greatest calamity which could befall us would be submission to a government of unlimited powers." Thomas Jefferson didn't say, "Watch out, the English may come back. We need to make sure, really be on guard for the French. We need to build up a huge naval force to make sure that the French don't come back." No. Thomas Jefferson said, "The greatest calamity which could befall us would be submission to a government of unlimited powers." George Washington. And this is for all you two-party cultists out there. No offense. Maybe. Is that a little too too harsh. I was one of you. I was one of you. I'm just out of the cult. I'm trying to do an intervention here. George Washington said, "Let me warn you in the most solemn manner against the baneful effects of the party of spirit." And all of these things certainly apply to people on the left as well, who were carrying water for the Nancy Pelosi's, the Chuck Schumer's, the AOC's, the Bernie Sanders, the same corrupt political class that's just got you tricked into supporting them, Joe Biden. George Washington said, "The spirit of party serves always to distract the public councils and enfeeble the public administration. It agitates the community with ill-founded jealousies and false alarms, kindles the animosity of one part against another." So it really is quite amazing that, I guess this was going on for 250 years. I don't know if it's been at this fever pitch, but it could have. John Adams said, "There is nothing which I dread so much as a division of the Republic into two great parties, each arranged under its leader and concerting measures in opposition to each other. This, in my humble apprehension, is to be dreaded as the greatest political evil under our Constitution." That's John Adams. And there's a lot of people who hear me talk about conservatives and liberals getting along. I tell you, you're all getting screwed by the same people. You need to quit fighting with each other and unfriending each other and really target your rage up, not across. If people that hear me say that, they think I'm some kind of a weak person. I just don't understand the left and the danger of my neighbor voting for Joe Biden. Look what they did to this country. But because I don't scream about Democrats here on this show, but Thomas Jefferson said, "It will be a great blessing to our country if we can once more restore harmony and social love amongst its citizens. I confess, as to myself, it is almost the first object of my heart and one to which I would sacrifice everything but principle." And I could do these quotes for 2 hours, warning us all about exactly what we have seen right now, what we are doing right now, dividing us into two camps, yelling at each other. And when I come back, there's a great article about what our political class is actually up to. This has come out of a Representative Madison Cawthorn, a relatively new member of Congress. He's gotten the lay of the land. I don't know if you've seen this story, but let's see what the political elites that most people are out there carrying water for are up to these days. We'll do that when I come back. Stay with me. Yeah, so I go off on my little rants about the two-party system and the hatred amongst people. Sylvia called during the break. She makes a good point. She said, you know, she doesn't hate anybody on the other side, but she just can't get with their principles. Well, that's the point. I mean, if there's somebody on the other side of the aisle or somebody that votes differently than you, then to befriend them and try to speak to them and see if you can reason with them and win them over through some level of debate and back and forth in a friendly way. I mean, I've got principles for sure. I'm not, you know, I'm a freedom guy. And neither party actually likes real freedom. So that's kind of a non-starter for me, but it doesn't mean I need to hate anybody, because I realize that we're all subjects. We're all subjects of the same throne of Washington, D.C. So why would I fight with my fellow serfs when the people that are actually oppressing me are not my neighbor or not my cousin? It's not even a Hollywood actor. I may find what they say despicable, but if they're not picking my pockets for a third of my wealth every single year, then my problems with them are really secondary. I found this pretty amazing, too. Here's what your political class is up to. I don't know if you've seen this story. It should surprise nobody, but it's nice to hear somebody that is swimming through the swamp explain to you exactly what's going on. Representative Madison Cawthorn, he's a Republican from North Carolina, says that in the 14 months he's been in Washington, D.C., he's been invited to D.C. Orgies and has witnessed lawmakers using cocaine. According to Just the News, citing the freshman lawmaker's recent appearance on the Warrior Post Society podcast. Quote, this is Madison Cawthorn, a Republican representative from North Carolina. Quote, "I look at all these people, a lot of them that I've looked up to through my life. Problem number one." Mike Madison's slogan, one of the quotes of the day, Mike Madison, I've said it often, it's my own quote, "Never fall in love with a politician." Many people very guilty of that. I was at one point. He says, I look at all of these people, a lot of them I've looked up to through my life. I've always paid attention to politics. Then all of a sudden, you get invited to, well, hey, we're going to have a kind of a sexual get-together at one of our homes. You should come, says Hawthorne. Quote, I'm like, what did you just ask me to come to? Then you realize they are asking you to come to an orgy. Now, he's a Republican. I know a lot of people love to play the two-party game, those deviants on the left, and God knows, up in Washington, D.C., there's plenty of them. But do you think only Democrats have been approaching this Republican about coming to an orgy? You think he's just hanging out with Democrats? That seems a tad odd to me. I would imagine he travels in some Republican circles. Later, Cawthorn revealed that some of the very lawmakers who are, quote, leading on the movement to try and remove addiction in our country, unquote, are on drugs themselves. Quote, you watch them do, you know, a key bump of cocaine right in front of you, and it's like, wow, this is wild. These are your big Republican drug warriors out there. Those of you who have been out there cheering for the war on drugs, where you love to see some of your fellow citizens locked in a little cage because they decided to ingest some substance that you don't want to ingest. And so you believe that what we need to do is hire more cops to get more of these people that are smoking a plant or snorting a plant. We need to get them off the streets and put them in tiny cages created by the money that's stolen out of your pocket, sent up to a drug-addled political class, a sexually perverted political class that builds the prisons to lock up more regular people. I mean, this is the drug war. The big banks launder the money. The people that write these drug laws are on drugs themselves, if they want to be or if they don't want to be. Some of them might not be. But they have the choice because they understand the drug laws are just for you little people. A political class can launder millions and millions of dollars through political campaigns. They can use their insider trading to make massive amounts of profit. You go try to sell a dime bag of marijuana somewhere in Madison County. You try to go grow a plant in your backyard and pick off some of the flowers and sell it to a buddy. Oh, they'll put you into a cage. HSBC, they can launder hundreds of billions of dollars in cartel profits. Nobody gets into any trouble. It is probably one of, if war is not the worst one, the drug war is the worst stance that conservatives take. And there's many of you listening to me right now that, I understand, but I can't abide by that. They have so conditioned you with this drug war to think that they are out there protecting you. The same conservatives who can look at coronavirus and see your rights being stripped from you under the guise of safety, and because our politicians and bureaucrats, Thomas Dobbs, Anthony Fauci, they love you. They want to protect you. And you can see right through that. You know, it's just a naked grab of power, stripping you of your rights. But when it comes to the drug war, you can't see it. You can't see that. But it's exactly the same talking point, isn't it? They're just trying to protect the children. We know what, that's a parent's job. It's not the government's job. Most conservatives, typically, we know this. Aren't we not the people who say, it doesn't take a village to raise my child, it takes me. I'm the one that's responsible for my children. But the law enforcement, the bureaucrats, the politicians that are doing key bumps of cocaine up on Capitol Hill, they're ones telling you, well, we got to keep these things scheduled. We got to lock American citizens into cages if they ingest these substances because they're so dangerous. There are lawmakers in Washington, D.C., high as a kite, passing drug laws. I guarantee you they're district attorneys. District attorneys stoned in courts, sentencing people. Judges too. And it's always for the little people. And the conservatives just such a massive blind spot on this because of just, I don't expect to change that for a lot of people. I think a lot of people are starting to catch on slowly but surely. You're realizing that we've been abused by endless laws and endless policing, but it's going to take a while. It's taken you 30, 40, 50, it depends on how old you are, pretty much your entire adult life, you've been told that the war on drugs is just to keep you safe because the government loves you. And so you've gone along with it. I can't undo that in a few dozen shows railing against the drug war. But so there you go, Washington, D.C., orgies and I mean, as they say, it's hookers and blow in Washington, D.C. We know there's prostitution. We know there's sex trafficking in D.C. There's drug use. There's orgies. There's debauchery. And we let these people pass laws for us. And at the same time, circling back, pit us against each other. Well, this political class, I mean, it's party time up in D.C. I got to tell you, if you have no morals, it's got to be a fun, fun place to be. I'll be right back. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. I told you, I'm a little grumpy. I'm burnt out. Take a couple days off, renew, recharge, spend some time with just laughing and joking with some friends down in Louisiana, making my little tour of Louisiana down there. But so I'm kind of in the scolding conservatives mood today. I mean, that's not unusual for me. I was a conservative. I've made these mistakes of being a Republican and these other kinds of things, but I just get to the point where I've had enough. And believe me, we're about to take a look at Joe Biden. I'll be popular in the little two-party theater stuff, but I mean, he's an existential threat. What did Ron Paul say here? Let me find my quote real quick. I was going to save it for when I got to him, but Ron Paul had a great quote of the day. Now, here it is. Ron Paul said, talking about Joe Biden's trip, as I talked about yesterday, Joe Biden appeared to be like a deranged monkey who picked up a gun in his trip overseas. I mean, you know, he's dangerous here. I couldn't believe the speech and the style that of his speeches over in Europe. Ron Paul said, "This may have been the most disastrous and dangerous presidential overseas trip ever." And I couldn't agree more. The great Ron Paul. And you know, let me say something about that too. I talk about don't fall in love with a politician, don't worship a politician. I'll tell you one thing right now. If Ron Paul started saying things I didn't agree with, I'd call him out on it. It's just I really am very well aligned with what Ron Paul says. Here's the other thing, too. Ron Paul was trying to get the government out of my life. He wasn't telling me new, improved ways to get the government into my life. And this is why I'm a libertarian, because Ron Paul understood he had no business running any aspect of my life. Republicans, they think they get to run a bunch of your life. They think they get to take a certain chunk of your income. They think they get to decide what you do and don't put into your body. Here in Mississippi, even, they told you when you could open your restaurant, how many people you could have in it, and what churches you could and couldn't open, and when you could open them. See, libertarians don't do that. So my admiration for Ron Paul is to kind of exposing me to the idea of, oh, hey, we don't really need the government. We really don't need this beast. And Ron Paul is incredibly consistent. Anyway, I wanted to get to this before we get to Biden stuff today. This was almost comical, almost funny. We're going to talk about the Federal Reserve. Don't let your eyes glaze over. It's the most important topic out there. Nothing else happens. There is no warfare state. There is no welfare state. There is no people flooding over the border for public benefits. There is no oligarch class. There are no trillionaires. Well, that's an exaggeration. There are none of these billionaire class of people that largely skew left because they want the government as big as possible to give them out their little candy. Without the Federal Reserve, what I refer to as the Death Star. There was a story out yesterday, the Fed. Who's to blame for high U.S. inflation? The folks who create fiscal policy, at least those says those who behind monetary policy. If you understand fiscal policy and monetary policy, fiscal policy is things like budgets, which we'll talk about in just a minute. Monetary policy is things like the Fed, where they decide to increase or contract the money supply. Typically, it's all increase. This is why you're seeing the inflation. The Fed has the gall to try to pass the buck on this. Pun intended. U.S. consumer prices have surged more than in other developed economies, and one reason might be the massive government support provided to Americans during the pandemic, according to researchers at the Federal Reserve Bank of San Francisco. So here's what the Fed is saying. It's the government spending too much money. Quote, fiscal support measures designed to counteract the severity of the pandemic's economic effect. Again, it wasn't the pandemic's economic effect. It was the bureaucrats' economic effect as they shut things down and bossed us around and closed businesses. destroyed supply chains, destroyed labor markets. So it wasn't the pandemic. It was the response, the hysterical, childlike response to the pandemic. Fiscal support measures designed to counteract the severity of the pandemic's economic effect may have contributed to this divergence by raising inflation about 3 percentage points by the end of 2021. This is written by Oscar Jorda, Celeste Liu, Fernandia. It doesn't matter. These are Fed heads. These are the Fed think tanks. Quote, however, without these spending measures, the economy might have tipped into outright deflation and slower economic growth, the consequences of which would have been harder to manage. What the Fed is saying is it's not our fault. This inflation isn't our fault. The inflation is the government spending. It's the people who set fiscal policy, not monetary policy. Here's the interesting thing about that. Where the hell does the Fed think that the government gets this money that they spent so much of? The Fed gave it to them. The Fed prints this money up, gives it to the government, and then has the balls to come out and say, it's them spending all that money that we gave to them. What the hell do you think they were going to do with it? So I do like that the little bit of finger pointing is starting here. The Fed, most people don't understand what it is. They don't care anything about it. I'm talking to an elite 8% of the population who might actually care to understand one of the most important topics in your life on a daily basis. But the fact there's some finger pointing maybe means that Americans are starting to get angry and looking for some answers. When it comes to finances, I'll get into this real quick. I'm fascinated by this. I could do an hour about it, but I won't. But the bond market is signaling some big trouble ahead. The yield curve, this is the difference in the yield on different maturity of bonds, 1 year, 2 year, 5 year, 10 year, 30 year bonds. There's a thing called a spread. So if one bond is trading at 1% interest and the other is trading at 2% interest, and then the spread is 1% or 100 basis points, the spreads have been narrowing, signaling a recession. And it says the last time the 20-year and the 30-year bonds, looking a year forward, had the same relationship, the dot-com bubble burst. So the bond, it's so funny to me. And I was guilty of this too when I was a child. And I consider being a child even into my 20s when I was so naive and silly with my understanding of the world. But it's so funny. Nobody really wants to talk about the Federal Reserve, even though it's the Death Star, the nexus of just about every single problem you can. The Federal Reserve holding hands with the U.S. federal government is really the cause of, I think, every single problem that conservatives in particular complain about, and liberals too, but I'm talking mostly to conservatives. These two entities are responsible for, and the Fed is the one that facilitates it all. Without the Fed, almost none of it happens, but people don't want to talk about it. And when it comes to our economy, everybody wants to talk about the stock market. Trump constantly wanted to go out and talk about what a great stock market he had and how the stock market was hitting all-time highs. And look at this stock market, stock market, stock market. Nobody talks about the bond market, which just dwarfs the size of the U.S. stock market and is sending out those signals. It's usually the first to tell you, we got a problem here. So the bond market is signaling trouble. And the last time it had similar signals was right before the dot-com bust. So invest accordingly. All right, I'm gonna get into some of this Biden stuff. Speaking of money, Biden came out, and I'm gonna let you hear his language around his new budget. He's coming out with a budget, and it is it's pretty laughable. But we live in a world now where you just say things. You just go out and you say. Suddenly, in 2020, a cloth mask or a ridiculous neck gaiter will protect you from an airborne, aerosolized respiratory disease. You just say these things. You don't have to back it up with anything. It can completely contradict what you said a year before. We live in a time where you just say things, and they're supposed to be true. This dude who won the NCAA women's swimming, he's a girl. You just say it. You just speak it into existence. This is the world we live in now. It doesn't have to have any basis in fact, no logic, no reason or anything to it. We just say things. So Joe Biden started to do his his press conference yesterday about the U.S. budget. He just started saying things, none of them based in facts. We'll listen to that when we come back. Stay with me. All right, so a couple of things. Biden, I guess, is he back in the country? For the love of God, I hope Joe Biden is back here before he really stumbles or mumbles us into World War III. The most dangerous trip I've ever seen by a U.S. sitting president. Still throw up my mouth a little bit to say that about Joe Biden, but he was asked by Steve Doocy about some of these statements, and this is part of just saying things. You know, you don't have to back them up with facts. You don't have to do anything. You just say things.
Are you worried that other leaders in the world are going to start to doubt that America is back if some of these big things that you say on the world stage keep getting walked back?
What's getting walked back?
He really might not know. I mean, he looks kind of earnest in his face when he says, what's getting walked back? I mean, he just says things and then he goes to sleep. He may have no idea that he's got people all around him that are having to go around and cover his butt for all the outrageous things he says.
It sounded like, just in the last couple of days, it sounded like he told U.S. troops they were going to Ukraine. It sounded like he said it was possible the U.S. would use a chemical weapon. And it sounded like you were calling for regime change in Russia, and we know
none of the three occurred.
See, you just say things. Well, that didn't happen. I don't know who Joe thinks he is. He's no Jedi. For all you Star Wars nerds out there like me, and you just wave your finger, these are not the droids you're looking for, that kind of thing. Joe Biden, he is not tapped into any force. He just, well, those things didn't happen. Oh, okay.
None of the three.
None of the three.
No.
You interpret the language that way. I was talking to the troops.
The world interpreted your language that way, dummy.
We're talking about helping train the troops in that are the Ukraine.
Oh, he almost said it again. He almost said to train the troops in Ukraine. We've been doing that all along. NATO. We got a bunch of spooks running around Ukraine, training up people. You know, these air quotes here in the studio, advisors. He almost said it again, and he realized, ooh, I'm not supposed to talk about U.S. troops in Ukraine training them.
Troops that are in Poland.
Poland.
That's the context. I sat there with those guys for a couple hours. That's what we talked about.
So when you said...
I would love to be inside the mind of an active-duty military guy who has to sit in a room with Joe Biden for 2 hours. Boy, that's got to have you really rethinking some life decisions, some big ones. This is the guy... This is the guy that could decide if I live or die, whether or not I ever see my children again. This is the guy I signed up to serve. And I would advise anybody who's thinking about letting their children sign up for the military right now to have some deep thoughts about that as well.
You're going to see when you're there. You were not intending to.
I was referring to with meeting with and talking with the Ukrainian troops are in Poland.
And when you said a chemical weapon...
What are Ukrainian troops doing in Poland? Don't they have a little something-something going on at home? What do they call a timeout? Joe Biden's doing a speech over in Poland. Timeout, okay? We're going to run over here to Poland to go to a meeting. They couldn't even Zoom call this thing from Ukraine, from the front lines?
Use by Russia would trigger a response in kind.
It will trigger a significant response.
What does that mean?
I'm not going to tell you. Why would I tell you? You got to be silly.
The world wants to know.
The world wants to know a lot of things. I'm not telling them what the response would be. Then Russia knows the response.
I keep when I look at him. You know, I'm looking at this on the video feed. Joe Biden so reminds me of that guy from Poltergeist. You're all gonna die. Everyone know who I'm talking about is the man with paper-thin skin, kind of bug eyes, old, crazy white hair. You know, check it out, what I'm talking about. You'll see what I mean. So, yeah, Joe Biden, well, those things never happened. Nobody, he really may not know. Let's see if I've got time to do this. Yeah, I do. Yeah, I want you to listen to, the nut job, I've got to come up with a name for Joe Biden. Sleepy Joe is fine. That was funny during the campaign for Donald Trump to use. Certainly true. The guy mumbles and stumbles unless they give him that crystal meth cocktail that they give him to put him out and get him through a 1 hour speech. But it's something that really, he wasn't Sleepy Joe when he was overseas, and that scared the ever living crap out of me. He was screaming at the top of his lungs. He was get off my lawn, old man, except with a shotgun, waving it around. And I got to think of some good name for this guy, the nuclear armed monkey. It's a little tedious, a little wordy. There's got to be, I've got to work. I'm clever. I can figure something out. But this is the nut job coming out. I want you to listen to him explain to you about the budget he has just proposed.
For over the years, my dad had an expression. He said, "Don't tell me what you value. Show me your budget. I'll tell you what you value. Don't tell me what you value. Show me your budget, and I'll tell you what you value." Well, the budget I'm releasing today sends a clear message to the American people that we value. First,
get ready. Get ready. Now, if you're eating cornflakes or something, you're about to spit some stuff out when you laugh at this first line. So swallow. Get ready.
Fiscal responsibility. Second, safety and security. And thirdly, the investments needed to build a better America. The first value is fiscal responsibility. The previous administration...
Here it comes. This is where you just say things. This is the society we live in. You just say things. All right, first, fiscal responsibility. Let me give you a little background. I'll set this up so that you know what this mental defect is saying. The budget proposes $5.79 trillion in budget expenses for 2023. It estimates as you hear him talk about fiscal responsibility, and he's about to put off some other statistics out there that are just as meaningless. Donald Trump was guilty of this exact same thing Joe Biden's about to do. I'm just the only one that will actually tell you the truth about that. But he's about to give you a bunch of flowery, all these great accomplishments he's done. Joe Biden's budget that he's starting out with, his first priority, is fiscal responsibility. It's a $1.15 trillion deficit. So just keep that in mind as he tries to blow this smoke.
As you all know, ran up record budget deficits. In fact, the deficit went up every year under my predecessor.
Unfortunately, that's true. That's true. Donald Trump blew giant holes in the budget, but he is a Keynesian. He believes that government spending is a good thing. Donald Trump was a Keynesian. His own economic advisor, Stephen Moore, came out and said, yeah, that is a problem. I mean, you know, Trump is a Keynesian. And for those people who don't understand that, it means that it's somebody who believes that the government spending a lot of money creates economic activity. Trump believed that, and he blew big holes in the budget, signing every single one of these $1 trillion, $2 trillion, $3 trillion, $4 trillion deficit bills he signed up into and including 2020.
My administration is turning that around. Last year, we cut the deficit by more than $350 billion.
See, this is another one of these situations where you run up massive budgets. I can't remember what the budget deficit was. And understand, budget deficits really are almost illusions because you tack on another trillion that the Fed might print and put on their balance sheet at the same time. That's really another $1 trillion of debt that's on the heads, signed on as the U.S. taxpayer is collateral for that. Your future earnings, your future labor is collateral for all this stuff. But you jack these things up to $2 or $3 trillion budgets, and then the next year you only have a $2 trillion budget, and you call that cutting the deficit. It's the same thing as he's about to explain in his jobs creation. It's you make everybody go home. You make massive corporate layoffs across the country by shutting down your economy. And then when you open it back up, as Donald Trump said, you add a bunch of jobs, and Donald Trump tried to go around during the campaign taking credit for creating all these jobs. We're doing it twice, he said. Yeah, you made everybody stay at home and lose their jobs, and now they're getting rehired, and you're claiming victory for these new jobs. Donald Trump did it, now Joe Biden's doing it.
This year we're on track to cut the deficit by more than $1.3 trillion.
So what that says is in his first year, they really overspent. And so this time they're only going to overspend by $1.15 trillion. So obviously, I guess they overspent by over $2 trillion last year, so that this year by only overspending by $1.15 trillion, that's somehow fiscal responsibility. And I want to say this statistic again because it's just one of my favorites. A trillion seconds. If you were to count to a trillion, 1 second at a time, a trillion seconds is 32,000 years. Let that sink in.
$1,300,000,000,000. That would be the largest one-year reduction in the deficit in U.S. history. And here's how we're achieving it, this record deficit reduction.
That's essentially like smacking your wife in the face every single day for 365 days. And then the next year, you only smack her in the face half of those times. And you go, there's never been a larger reduction in violence, in domestic violence in this household ever.
First, we're growing the economy. We've created a record 6.7 million jobs since I took office.
And there you go again. We shut everything down. Now we're letting people go back to work, and we're creating these. We take credit for creating these jobs.
And we've generated a GDP growth of 5.7%, the best economic growth we've seen in this country in over 40 years.
Again, you crush GDP by crushing the economy, and then as you let it open up, it obviously increases because you put it at such a low mark the year before, and then you take credit for it.
This has led to substantial increase in government revenues and dramatically improved our fiscal situation. Secondly,
it's just, as I say, this is just saying things. It's just unbelievable that somebody can get up there and say, now, he may really not know what he's saying. These numbers put in front of him, I'll bet you they put these numbers in front of him, and he went, oh, wow, am I doing that? That's great. With no context, he obviously can't think for himself. It may make it very easy for him to go out and peddle this crap. But it was really quite amazing. A $1.15 trillion budget deficit, he calls this. Priority number one, fiscal responsibility. Yeah, just say things.
No phone, no phone. I just want to be alone.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. We're going to get into a minute what feels like they are orchestrating the takedown of Joe Biden, and it's not the Republicans. I think it's the Democrats who have decided it's time to pull the plug. We'll see the handwriting on the wall. He got them where they wanted to be, basically complete power, but he's of absolutely no utility to the Democratic Party right now, except for maybe he alone will kind of absorb all of the disgust for his kinds of policies in the Democratic Party policies. But I think they are seeing going into the midterms that they need to do something. And it feels like maybe they're starting to, when the New York Times reports on the laptop, and it wasn't a big report. It wasn't like, oh my gosh, this thing was real. The New York Post was right. But they did just kind of offhandedly mention, well, it does appear that this laptop was the real deal. Just that alone from the New York Times says something is afoot. They didn't do that independently. They're not independent journalists. They're an arm of the Democratic Party and the Washington establishment. So the decision might be made to take pull the plug on Joe Biden. I wanted to mention one thing about his budget. I'm curious to know what conservatives think about this, what Trump supporters think about this. Is this a good thing? Rebuffing progressive lawmakers' calls for Pentagon spending cuts, President Joe Biden on Monday set to unveil a budget blueprint for the next fiscal year that includes a record $813.3 billion in funds for the U.S. military apparatus, a $31 billion increase from the current level. So all of the conservatives out there that have been cheering for these huge military budgets under Donald Trump, are you cheering? Is this a bright spot with Joe Biden? You think Joe Biden's right? Oh, we got this one right, Mike. He's going to spend even more. I wonder if Joe Biden's using the same lie that Donald Trump did in this rebuilding the military. That was the slogan that Donald Trump used to pay off his defense contractor masters. I guess Joe Biden is using the Russia conflict that he created. He was the point man on creating this conflict. I guess he's using that now to serve his defense contractor masters. Yeah, there's a lot of difference between these parties. Just tons, right? Yeah. Defense industry gets more and more and more money. It doesn't matter who controls any lever of power in Washington, D.C., they win. I have to play this clip before we get into the Hunter Biden stuff. This is just too beautiful, and I just found it this morning, and I can't wait to play it. Some professor from Washington, D.C., he doesn't have his name on the chyron here, so I don't know who this is. They refer to him as a professor, and above him it says Washington, D.C., so we already can smell a rat. He's probably a spook. But he goes on Indian television to talk about, he's going to lecture the Indians on the fact that they need to take a stance in this Russia-Ukraine thing. They need to come down squarely on the side of freedom, independence, and democracy for Ukraine and call out those dastardly Russians. He goes on Indian television to lecture them on this. The host is having none of it, and I love it. Pardon for the music behind this thing. It's completely unnecessary in this video, but it's there, and I can't take it out.
What you're seeing is the West organize.
This is the professor from Washington, D.C., lecturing India on, you know, you need to come along with the West in this condemnation and this solidarity against Vladimir Putin.
Solidarity against Russia.
Professor
Kapchuk. We're seeing serious sanctions against Russia. Yeah. Most of the world now, is coming together against
professor,
Russia.
India no, they're not.
Should get off the fence.
Okay, now I'll tell you something, Professor Kapchuk. I hope that you will allow me a decent response, and then Ambassador Pawan Verma will respond to you. I see John wants to respond to you. First, I'd like to. First of all, with the greatest of respect, Professor Charles Kupchan, you have no moral standing to talk.
Amen.
You are in no position, you as in America. America is in no position to pretend to be the guardian of democracy and human rights. You are the worst perpetrator of atrocities.
Amen.
You, in Barack Obama in 2011, intervened in a nascent Libyan civil war, you know, using the NATO and Arab League partners, prolonging the war for one decade. You launched armed conflict in at least six countries. Iraq, Syria, Yemen, Somalia, Niger. You carry out drone strikes. You've killed thousands with your drone strikes. You run Guantanamo Bay. You're dealing with India. We're a big country. We're not your satellite state. So don't lecture us on what we need to do. We are going to look out for yourself. You talk about, you use the phrase geopolitical expediency in place of values. You lecture me as an American to an Indian on values, and you say that we are acting in geopolitical expediency. Allow me to complete, sir. Where were your values when in the first 2 months of the U.S. invasion of Iraq, 7,186 Iraqi civilians were direct casualties of the war? Was that your expediency? Was that expression of your values, Professor Kupchan?
Oh, so beautiful. So beautiful. That's right. So Professor Warmonger makes the tragic mistake for himself of going on Indian television to lecture them on democracy and peace around the world. That is how every U.S. foreign policy expert should be treated around the world. And I hate to tell Americans, other countries know exactly the hypocrisy of the United States and the absolute terror that we have wrecked on the world. And if you are one of these people out there who says you are always blaming America first, then you don't understand the difference between the country and the psychopaths who have hijacked our foreign policy. They should be opposed at every turn. When I come back, we'll start looking at the laptop. Be right back.
I went home with a waitress, the way I always do. How was I to know?
She was with her. All right, so the question is, are they about to take down Joe Biden? And I'm not talking about the Republicans. I'm talking about the fact that the establishment may be coming after him. He's outlived his usefulness. He was a placeholder. We knew that going in. We know he's in charge of absolutely nothing, but he's so wildly unpopular and unhinged that it may be the fact that they are going to go ahead and pull the plug on him. I've got May of this year. I've had May of this year, I think, since his inauguration for when he was going to go. I thought it would just be a stroke or something like that, and that's not out of the realm of possibility that he will. And I never thought the stroke would actually occur in May, but that they would remove him at that time for some health emergency. Obviously, the guy is unwell. So we'll see. When it comes to the laptop, though, I'm gonna bust a little bit of the bubble out there, the idea that the Republicans are suddenly getting getting bold, acting. This is, to me, theater. You know, I've always asked, people talk about, ever since I've been paying attention, people have talked about election integrity. They didn't use those words, but they talk about manipulation of voting machines, rigged elections, you know, just general corruption in Washington, D.C., or just about at every level of politics. And I always ask the question, well, why don't the Republicans do something about it when they get all the levers of power? And they don't seem to do that, do they? They didn't seem to get rid of Obamacare. They didn't seem to build a wall. They don't ever seem to actually do these things that they tell you they're going to do when they get into power. Why don't they fix elections if there's been all of this hanky-panky going on for decades and decades? Well, the obvious answer to me is that, well, Republicans use it too. And it's just a kind of a, can't call it a gentleman's agreement because none of these people are gentlemen or gentlewomen. It's just, I guess, a thug's code. We let you use it sometimes. We use it sometimes. We all stay mum. We get what we want. Some of our little people might have to sacrifice, but the establishment remains. So when it comes to the Hunter laptop, I think this is Matt Taibbi put together a compilage, and I'm going to make a point here, too. Matt Taibbi is a left-wing journalist, former Rolling Stone guy. I disagree with him on all kinds of things like universal health care, mostly economic issues. But Matt Taibbi is one of these people on the left that didn't go along with Russiagate. He called out how ridiculous it was. He's a guy who's pretty truthy. Now, he may get some things wrong. I may get some things wrong. But he seems to be a guy that is actually interested in the truth. And this is one of the reasons I tell you to act like everybody on the left is just insane and you just can't have anything to do with them. They're lost. It's not true. There's a lot of people on the left that can still think for themselves. And I would love to sit down with Matt Taibbi and explore some of the ideas that he has that our government should provide health care or any benefits to anybody for anything at any time for any reason, because it never works. But I can have a polite discussion with him about that. But he put this together just to point out how bad the media has been on the Hunter Biden laptop. Of course, it was called Russian disinformation. And this clip is actually, I mean, it's so long. You're going to hear it's just little quick sound bites. It's 4 minutes long. I'm not going to play the whole 4 minutes. But I think it's important to understand that this is put together by somebody actually on the left.
Incriminating evidence allegedly found on a laptop belonging to Biden.
Allegedly.
Some sort of Russian disinformation campaign effort.
One eternity later.
Biden emails finally authenticated according to the New York Times.
It's rewind time.
It's a lie.
Altered or fake. Unverified emails.
The story did not quite land due to the lack of verification.
Listen.
Can't be verified.
What can't be verified?
The laptop.
Why do you say that?
Well, because it can't be verified.
I don't even want to report this. This is the one of the most powerful families in Washington.
Liz, I'm a journalist.
Okay, I would love if you guys would start doing that verification.
No, we're not going to do your work for you.
It's a journalist's job.
Contrary.
Not anymore.
For all we know, these emails are made up.
Not really stories, just pure distractions. No serious journalist should fall for it.
It's a journalist's job to find out if this is verified.
The bottom line is we cannot confirm the story.
Experts say the emails cannot be authenticated.
The mainstream media is not reporting on this story because we can't authenticate this material.
The Hunter Biden laptop material is genuine. Genuine. Genuine.
This is a classic example of the right-wing media machine. It just lacks credibility. The fact that it appeared in the New York Post.
The only place low enough to put this orphan bastard story in print.
Obvious disinformation.
All right, so this goes on and on and on. We are all familiar with what the media did with the Hunter Biden laptop story. Leading into the 2020 election, they buried it. They called it Russian disinformation. They hyperventilated about it. But now the New York Times has come out and said, look at that. Turns out that this thing is true. Now, I've got some clips here from Jack Maxey, but I wanted to play something first. This is just a couple of days old, I believe, and thanks to John for sending this to me, although I'm going to point out something inconvenient about this. This is Chuck Grassley. And Chuck Grassley is, he appears to be kind of making hints that he's about to start getting to the bottom of this laptop situation. This is Chuck Grassley. I believe he's from Iowa. He's a Republican, old as the hills, but he's starting to talk tough. And this is what he said. It's a 10-minute video, but I'll play the very beginning of it where he shows that it seems like the Republicans are finally finding their footing here, and they're going to take down the Hunter Biden laptop issue.
Senator Johnson and I will produce new records to show additional connections between the Biden family and the communist Chinese regime.
This plays very well with Republicans who are hyperventilate about China. There's many people who hear me say that, and you think I'm disparaging your thoughts that China is about to come take all of our stuff. Again, I'll reference you back to the beginning of the show where I told you China can't lay even a finger on us compared to what our own government is doing to us. But anyway, this plays well with the Republicans, and I'm sure that the Bidens have had dirty dealings with the Chinese and the Ukrainians and anybody else who was willing to front them a few bucks.
Report exposed extensive financial relationships between Hunter and James Biden and Chinese nationals connected to the communist regime. These were Chinese nationals connected to the Chinese government's military and intelligence service. One of those individuals was a person by the name of Patrick Ho.
Okay, so he goes into this thing. I didn't even watch the whole thing. And largely, I didn't really watch it. And what Chuck Grassley is talking about may actually be true. I have no doubts whatsoever that Hunter Biden didn't have his nasty little depraved fingers in a whole bunch of different pies, capitalizing on his Diddy, who was equally corrupt. But this is Jack Maxey. And he did an interview. Oh, gosh, what was this thing called? Did I write it down? It's a long interview, and I can send you the link if you want it. But he starts talking about what's on this laptop. Apparently, Jack Maxey has gone to Switzerland. He fears for his safety. You can imagine if any of this is true. And he seems earnest about this. Now, I am always on guard because of what I saw happen to the minds of many Americans when the Q stuff came out. What happened to the minds of Americans when I heard the watermarked ballots, and everybody immediately believes everything that bolsters their point of view. I believe this laptop is real. I believe Hunter Biden has got some serious criminal tendencies and some perversion in his life. He is a true nasty human being. His father is a corrupt parasite as president of the United States. So this does bolster some of my views on that. I always allow for the fact that maybe this guy is just giving us more hopium. Watermarked ballots, Q, the storm is coming, all of this garbage that so many people bought onto, a hook, line, and sinker to kind of distract you and make you feel like behind the scenes everything's taking place. It'll be great. Next thing you know, you're locked in your house, you've lost your job, inflation is soaring, and everybody's still waiting for the white horse to arrive. But Jack Maxey seems pretty earnest about this, but he makes some interesting references to this laptop. And one of those things that he says is going to reference Chuck Grassley in particular.
I have 100% clear, 100% in writing evidence that Metabiota, you've heard me speak about this, that Metabiota is inside Ukraine working in those labs, is a DOD contractor in writing. And just 15 minutes ago, we found documents that make it appear as if Zolchevsky, the crooked criminal chairman of Burisma, is actually one of the largest shareholders of Metabiota. And now America and the world can understand exactly why Joe Biden had to go over there and make sure that Zolchevsky was never prosecuted. Yes, we were running labs inside Ukraine. Yes, Metabiota was in those labs. Yes, Zolchevsky, the chairman of Burisma, is one of the largest shareholders of this company. And I'm going to tell you, this is 100% why Joe Biden had to go get that prosecutor fired.
Yeah.
This is 100% why Joe Biden had to become president, because these guys violated the findings in the 2005 weapons of mass destruction document that was provided to the president of the United States that was going to provide a blueprint for how to deal with everything from chemical, nuclear, and biological. And it was going to be done in a way that would have allowed for oversight by our elected leaders. I can tell everybody There's not a single member of that Senate or House who should be reelected.
All right, we're going to talk about that in just a second. I'll let him finish on that point. But one thing I'll point out is that I certainly believe the Bidens are massively corrupt, but you understand, again, that they can't be corrupt at this level. They can't be in line for hundreds of millions, billions of dollars without this massive federal government that we have built, and conservatives have cheered for this. So the Department of Defense is so awash in cash that they're giving these corporations money to launch biolabs in Ukraine. This is the money that conservatives have been cheering for at every Trump rally when he talked about increasing military budgets. Now Joe Biden's gone and increased them again. You can't have this corruption without that kind of spending, without that size of a Defense Department budget. And, of course, the Defense Department could never get this kind of money without anyone, yeah, the Federal Reserve. So this is not a single-party issue. This is just the latest corruption. This is the Bidens. They are corrupt people. But you cannot have this without this massive federal government. This is what libertarians keep telling you. You can change parties if you want to, but if you keep giving the Defense Department $813 billion a year, over $1 trillion when you include national security apparatus of Homeland Security and FBI and ATF and the rest of these organizations, you'll always have this corruption. What, you think you're going to elect a bunch of snow-white Republicans that just, they wouldn't be on the take. They wouldn't go out and get Department of Defense contracts that we didn't actually need for national security. Are you kidding me? Now, back to, you heard him say that nobody on the Senate Foreign Relations or Armed Services, I can't remember, one of these committees should ever be reelected. He's going to name some names here. Many of them I have named myself.
He had a copy of this laptop since when?
I delivered it to the Senate Judiciary Committee on July 8th. That's Graham, Grassley, Cotton, Blackburn, Sass, Tillis, you know, Kennedy, Lee, all these big heroes of our party. These people should be kicked out of their country clubs when we're done with this. Their pensions should be removed. People we have been betrayed like nobody can imagine.
Yeah. So these people have known about these things for, look, they've known about the Clinton crime family, the Biden crime family. And I always ask myself, why don't they ever actually do anything about it? Oh, what's his name? Jim Jordan. Oh, he'll certainly hold a hearing. Did you hear what Jim Jordan said? Did you hear the questioning from Jim Jordan? Did you see Jim Jordan on Sean Hannity last night? Boy, he really laid out the case, didn't he? How many perp walks have we seen for any of these things? Boy, I loved it when Donald Trump went up there and drained the swamp. Did he? I don't recall a single perp walk, and I actually remember some of the chief neocon war criminal swamp dwellers infesting the Trump administration. He was either in on it or he just was duped, and I lean toward duped, which is a little bit of an exoneration of Donald Trump, but a lot of smoke with the Republicans, no fire. A lot of talk about getting rid of Obamacare, no delivery. A lot of talk about everything, no delivery on anything. But this guy, Jack Maxey, is saying, oh, these Republicans have had this for forever. What I'm saying is, maybe now the word has gone out. Okay, the Democrats have said, the establishment has said, all right, it's time for Biden to go. Look at his polling numbers. He's doing nothing. He's an anchor around our ankles at this point. We got what we needed out of him. We got another year of COVID hysteria. We got a vaccine peddler in chief. Of course, they could have had that with Donald Trump because Donald Trump's been running around telling conservatives, you should embrace the victory that this vaccine is. Operation Warp Speed was the greatest thing that's ever happened. This is what Donald Trump tells you, but they got Joe Biden in there to do a bunch of mandates that Trump probably couldn't have gotten away with. But now he's outlived his usefulness, even the New York Times. And so we're going to see, does this bleed out into the rest of the media? Does this become an actual issue where we can see them lining up against him? One last thing here with Jack Maxey.
There's evidence all over this computer that Hunter was grooming and abusing his 12-year-old niece. There are thousands of pictures of young girls. We finally decided to stop looking at the pictures because I am certain we're going to find things that are going to require me to take this to a police station here in Switzerland. These are the most awful people I have ever come across in my entire life. And I know that I'm angry and I'm running hot.
I have no reason to doubt the veracity of any of that. Cannot imagine the things that Hunter Biden has been into, that Joe Biden has been into. But I started the show with an accounting from a new Republican congressman from North Carolina who says, oh, my gosh, I'm constantly approached for orgies up here, and people that I've respected and looked up to my whole life are doing cocaine up in Washington, D.C. You know, John McCain's wife, what's her name? Cindy McCain. I played it a long time ago. I don't have the clip at my fingertips, where she came out and said, oh, yeah, we all knew what was going on with Jeffrey Epstein. It's just that, you know, nobody really wanted to talk about it. Because they're all compromised. This is your political class. As I said, hookers, blows, kids, whatever it is. These people are all into it. So the Republicans' hands are not clean on this. The Republicans knew what Jeffrey Epstein was up to. Republicans took his money and money from his things. So because the knee-jerk reaction is to point to this stuff and say, look at Hunter Biden and Joe Biden, what the Biden crime family. I'm with you. That's fine. But just flesh out your views a little bit and understand. This is bipartisan corruption in Washington, D.C. Well, we're going to see. We're going to see if this is just more hopium, more thousands of sealed indictments, 10,000, 100,000, 400,000 sealed indictments. What was the last number that I heard? And not a perp walk to be seen throughout all of the Trump administration. As a matter of fact, the only people that languished in jail during the Trump administration was Julian Assange, who was actually blowing the lid off of the deep state. For some reason, Trump persecuted, prosecuted, and tried to slow kill him in a prison. If you can tell, I'm a little suspicious of the Trump administration and do not want them back. But anyway, we'll see if they've made the decision to pull the plug on Joe Biden. It could be swift. A couple of revelations, a couple of pages, a couple of emails out of this laptop, and Joe Biden might be gone. I've got to tell him, hang in there for about another 40 days. If we hit May, I got to tell you, I'm some kind of Mike Tradamus. I'll be right back. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. And I do have a little bit of time today for my Tech Tuesday segment. I found a few fairly interesting stories out there. One of them is this. What is the state here? This is Arizona. Isn't Arizona a red state? I believe it is. Maybe it's purple, but I think it's red. I think it's still a Republican-led state. I should have looked this up because I'm just curious, because this might be one of those things. If this was California or New York, there'd be a lot of people say, oh, it could never happen here. But Arizona's rolling out something new. And maybe some of the law and order types might find this appealing. But I got to tell you, I'll tell you about some of the dangers of this on the other side. This is Arizona rolling out some new technology for their drivers out there.
From the device you never leave home without, prove your identity with Mobile ID. A contactless, convenient way to securely verify your identity from your phone. Prove your age by presenting an app-generated barcode for scanning or by simply showing the digital version of your license. Each step in the enrollment process adds another layer of security.
Yeah, so there you go. The digital ID being rolled out in Red State, Arizona. I don't think this is the last one where they try these kinds of things. We need to keep an eye on our own Mississippi legislature against things like this. But just a matter, if you're one of these law and order people who want to give police just unlimited power because you believe that the police's only job is just out there to keep you safe. Look, police do some heroic work. I guess I've got to say it so that people don't misinterpret me, because people don't really think things through. But police do heroic work, but they're also tasked with a lot of other less honorable things. It's part of their job. They sign up for it. You take the good with the bad. There's just so much bad that's not acknowledged. But you can just imagine, if we can get all of our identification just onto our phones, then, no, they could just set up little towers around where they just pluck all of your information, know where you are all the time. Now, I can imagine a scenario where this might be great. If a police officer pulls up, you know, you never know who's driving a car just by the tag. It could be a stolen car, it could be a borrowed car. But if police could pull up behind it and find out exactly who's driving that car because of all the information that's radiating from their cell phone and immediately be able to identify all of the occupants of the car, boy, I would imagine to the law and order crowd, this sounds great. But is that the kind of privacy destruction that you want in this country right now? What happens to that day where your vaccination card is also radiating from that phone and you could have people call up, you know, pull up behind you or just driving down the road, kind of like a roadblock where they're just waiting to find some people that have got an app. Their booster has elapsed. It's time for another booster. We got some diseases traveling down the road here. We got to pull these people over and shoot them in the arm. I mean, I know this stuff sounds crazy. But the idea that Red State Arizona is going to this digital ID means that it can probably not be far off from the pathetic excuse for a legislature we have when it comes here to civil liberties. So this should be resisted. The more stuff you have on your phone, the more vulnerable you are. But maybe there's some good news there. This was an interesting story. This is a story that appeared on Zero Hedge, and I got to tell you, I'm attracted to this idea. Dumb phone sales are soaring as people revolt against, quote, overwhelming, unquote, smartphones. In a time when various developed world intelligence agencies are filling up petabytes of hard disk space with domestic phone recordings and tracking their own citizens who, in the pursuit of a liberal agenda, have been escalated to a greater terrorist threat than actual foreign terrorists, some people have had enough and are throwing their smartphones into the trash and replacing them with the dumb phone instead. And this goes through the story of one smart, intelligent, I don't know if it's the child or the parents, one 17-year-old. Apparently she's English. BBC is reporting that she is not typical of her teens, but she doesn't have a smartphone. Instead of scrolling through apps like TikTok and Instagram all day, she uses a dumb phone. And what they're talking about is people starting to ditch these apps. I'll be honest, I picked up my phone last night after reading the story or preparing. I'd seen it a couple days ago, but preparing for the story, I started looking at my phone going, you know, I should just dump all of the apps. It still leaves me vulnerable to tracking, and it can be a time suck. But I'm pretty good about setting my phone down when I don't need it and walking away for a period of time. So if you ever text me and it takes me a while to get back to you, it's because I'm not strapped to my phone constantly. I have been guilty of that in the past. I'm trying to break myself of the habit. But is the pendulum swinging on technology? And people are getting these low-priced brick phones. You don't have to have any data packages streaming on these things. There's no tracking. There's no tracing. There's no apps that are constantly violating your privacy and uploading information and demographics on you to try to sell you more products. And there are some out there that you can get that are really kind of completely off the grid phones. Now, I will admit, texting is probably the hardest part for me to get away from, not because of me, but because that's how people communicate now. And I'm certainly not going back to the pushing the number 2-3 times to find a C. I can't imagine having to do that. So I'm as guilty of this as anybody else, but maybe the pendulum's swinging a little bit and people are realizing that they need a detox from some of these technologies, in particular the phone that is such an incredible time suck and is being used to track and trace us all. We'll see how that goes. This may be a one-off story. This one is not a surprise to me. Headline of this story is IRS seeing, quote, mountains of fraud, unquote, in cryptocurrencies, NFTs, says a special agent. I am just here chronicling kind of the tug of war that I see between the freedom of cryptocurrencies, which I am fully in support of. As a libertarian, a decentralized currency sounds absolutely fantastic to me, particularly as countries around the world race to devalue their currencies and leave you, what did the founding fathers say, homeless in the land that your forefathers conquered. I love the idea of a decentralized currency. I just can't believe that the huge government that we have grown is going to leave their mitts off of this, particularly if it starts to compete with the banks that make a tremendous amount of money off of your deposits and your transactions. If cryptocurrency ever gets to a level where it's actually cutting into the big banks' profits that run our federal government, I believe the federal government will be tasked to go in and make some changes. Speaking at a virtual event held on Tuesday, by the USC Gould School of Law, Ryan Corner from the IRS Criminal Investigations Los Angeles field said that both NFTs and cryptocurrencies are becoming a growing area of concern for regulators and tax collectors as they've steadily become more mainstream. And so what government does when they see something where they're worried they can't regulate it or tax it, they're going to make you fear it. This Comer guy, he says, we're just seeing mountains and mountains of fraud in this area. And you know we're going to hear this. Oh, this is how drug dealers and terrorist organizations are financing their operations. They're using these cryptocurrencies. In order to keep the American people safe, we must intervene. Now, I think these NFTs are about one of the dumbest things I have ever seen, have ever seen, except for the next story that I'll cover. NFTs are absolutely ridiculous, but if people want to be dumb, I am a firm believer in the freedom to be incredibly dumb. Now, I may be the dummy. People are making money off these things right now while they're in the middle of this tulip mania. I'm sitting on the sidelines judging it, trying to use logic and reason, which is not real profitable in today's world. But I do not want to see regulation, and I don't want to see taxation on these things. But the IRS is saying they have got a lot of concerns about the fraud that they see as a potential in the NFT and cryptocurrency world. So this just is another alarm bell to me that says they're coming for these coins. I am right there with you, championing freedom and getting away from fiat money and all of this stuff. I'm just telling you, I don't think they're going to leave it alone. I think we will find out in the next couple of years. As a matter of fact, cryptocurrencies are getting more popular, more mainstream, and the larger they get, the more they might take a bite out of big bank profits, out of tax collections, these kinds of things, the more they're going to step in to try to regulate them. And I believe the government wins this battle. Hopefully I'm wrong. I'll be right back. All right, final segment for the day. I'm going to bail on my story. I have some metaverse story. Psychologists are warning, don't let your kids get on this metaverse thing. I'll try to flesh that out in another segment at some point. But I wanted to finish up with this NFT thing because I was reading through the story during the break, and there's some other things that I think are really kind of gross about this and why I am so suspect that the government is going to come in and regulate, take, ban these cryptocurrencies, and they'll try to corral us all into a central bank digital currency. I don't know if you've noticed, government does not like competition. In the story about NFTs, and I told you, they're going to tell you, oh, we've got to come in and regulate these things for your own good. It's just another one of these things. It's just like the war on drugs, though. People can't see that, but they can maybe see this. Due to their rising popularity, regulators are struggling to police how the tokens are used and prevent them from being utilized for criminal activities such as fraud, money laundering, market manipulation, and tax evasion. Now, what's so funny about that list there? Now, fraud's always been around. People were sending in checks to fraudulent things back in the 1970s. They were handing over cash to fraudulent things back in the 1940s. Banning cryptocurrencies, regulating cryptocurrencies. This may make fraud easier in some cases, but I'm sure debit cards made fraud easier as well. But in cases of things like money laundering and tax evasion, what happens is the government arbitrarily makes something illegal, regulates something, forcing it into a black market so that people have to launder that money if they participate in this activity that is just a bunch of mental midgets with political titles deem something to be illegal. And then there's tax evasion. Yep, set tax rates confiscatorily high and force people into ways to try to avoid them and then penalize them for that. It's quite a racket. In December, former First Lady Melania Trump released her first NFT and launched a new platform that will release NFTs regularly called Melania's Vision. The venture combines her passion for art and commitment to helping our nation's children fulfill their own unique American dream, the former First Lady said, noting that some of the proceeds will go to help children in the foster care community. Huh, some. With the move, the former First Lady joined a growing list of celebrities who have launched their own NFT collections, including award-winning director Quentin Tarantino and electronic music artist deadmau5. However, Comer, IRA, that was the terrorist organization over in Ireland, right? He's the part of the terrorist organization known as the IRS here in the United States. However, Comer warned Tuesday that celebrities who are capable of swaying the price of digital assets, given their huge following, aren't immune to the IRS's criminal probes. Now, listen to this statement from somebody who is the boss of all of you. This should be chilling to most people, but we've just all been corralled into this idea that this is just completely necessary to let our country run. I mean, how can Joe Biden put together a $5.7 trillion budget if he doesn't come in and take a third of our income? Come on, Mike. So this is Comer at the IRS. He says, quote, "We're not necessarily out there looking for celebrities, but when they make a blatant or open comment that says, hey, IRS, you should probably come look at me, that's what we do." There's your government. There's your government right there. Better watch what you say. You may call attention to yourself, and that's what we love. We'll come look at you. We'll turn over. And we know the heavy-handed tactics of this agency. It's you're guilty until you prove yourself innocent, boy. So the government, and I believe, is coming after these. That's a nice little bow on the show here. I'll take it around in a full circle. The biggest threat to your freedom and your way of life is not China. Calm down about China. If we had our fiscal house in order, if we had our financial house in order, China will collapse and we will sail right past them. But we don't demand that. We instead demand $1 trillion in military spending so we can face off with them militarily, maybe somehow, someday in the future, if they go after Taiwan. We're going to bankrupt ourselves so that we can keep China in check. China's not the threat. Russia's not the threat. Iran's not the threat. The threat to your way of life, the threat to your children's future, is your own government. It always has been, always will be. That's all the time I got. I'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.